Hi everyone, welcome to Desi Dreamers, a brand new podcast which will transport you into the aspirational mindscapes of British South Asian trailblazers and visionaries. I want to go past a singular definition of South Asians, where Tamils, Punjabis, Pakistanis, Bangladeshis and so many more are perceived as the same type of ethnic identity. By talking to inspiring British Asian trailblazers, I want to create a vivid tapestry of the South Asian experience, including generations of dreams deferred, obstacles overcome, and boundaries transcended through a spirit of determination. I also want to build a community of listeners, young British Asians like me who want to learn from trailblazing role models from the diaspora, who have fascinating, inspiring stories. In this episode, I'll be talking to Tabitha Mary. Tabitha Mary is a Tamil beauty content creator and model based in London. Born and raised in a small city in Germany, she has navigated the challenges of being a dark-skinned South Asian in Western society. Tabitha started her beauty content journey in 2018 as a passion project while working in advertising and has since turned it into a full-time career. I'm so excited to talk to her about her journey from Germany to London, her experiences with colorism, and how she's using her platform to challenge beauty standards and inspire self-love in the South Asian community. So join me as we welcome Tabitha Mary to Desi Dreamers. Hi Tabitha, welcome to Desi Dreamers. How are you? And normally I ask what's been happening in your life this week, but I don't know if we have enough time for that. That might take up the whole episode. Oh my God, you've had so much going on. Take us through some of the stuff you've been doing.
Yeah, it has been a pretty crazy weekend, I would say, mainly because it's Fashion Week. Mm-hmm. So I had a bunch of events, like starting from last week, just kind of throughout the weekend, and then a couple mm-hmm. shows as well, which mm-hmm. has been amazing and just mm-hmm. incredible to kind of witness. And yeah. be able to be in those spaces. Mm-hmm. It's also really inspiring, I would say, because you see a lot of people just dressing, mm-hmm. you know, dressing amazing mm-hmm. and really, like, you really just get some inspo from there as well and from the shows mm-hmm. itself. So,
oh my God, yeah. amazing. And so when has London Fashion Week finished, or are we halfway through? What's the season looking like?
Yeah, so there's still some ongoing shows at the moment, mm-hmm. I think throughout the week. So mm-hmm. yeah, it will kind of continue. And then there's always, you know, things going on at night as well, like a night out. So
okay, yeah. Very exciting. Did you do any of the walks this year, or were you kind of attending for certain shows?
Yeah, I didn't actually walk any of the shows, mm-hmm. but yeah, one of my favorite shows that I attended was the Caroline Vito show.
Okay.
She's a Brazilian designer, mm-hmm. and she showcases curve models. Like, her whole cast is curve models. So mm-hmm. it's just so incredible to see, you know. And her designs are stunning as well. So yeah.
Oh my God, amazing.
It's definitely one of my favorite shows.
That's so exciting. And I'm going to be asking you a lot about fashion and that mm-hmm. aspect of your work as well. So I'm really excited to get into that. So first, I wanted to ask you about beauty, representation and self-love, because those are the key things that I see on your social media work relating to your content, your collaborations. I can see that those are key aspects of some of the things that you do. Mm-hmm. So could you take us on a typical day for you as a content creator and model? I think it must be such a varied lifestyle, so I'm sure it's hard to think of a typical day, but just give us an example of some of the things that you regularly do and different ways that you get opportunities and things like that.
Like you said, every day is honestly so different.
Yeah.
But and you know, that's something I definitely struggled with when mm-hmm. I first went freelance, because I was so used to having a structure and my 9-to-5 that mm-hmm. suddenly having all this time and, you know, having the responsibility to, like, be accountable for your own day and, like, mm-hmm. how productive you are was tough. But mm-hmm. I try to kind of block out things in my diary, so, like, if it's not in my diary, it's not happening, mm-hmm. essentially. But for modeling work, I would, you know, block out the whole day, because mm-hmm. shoots can sometimes start as early as, you know, like 6 a.m. to kind of leave and get there. So mm-hmm. Those can be quite long days. Mm-hmm. Like 6 a.m. till like 7 p.m. sometimes. But other than that, I go to a lot of sort of beauty PR events, mm-hmm. Where you get to experience, you know, new product launches or mm-hmm. get to network with other creatives and mm-hmm. meet the PRs and the marketing teams kind of behind that brand.
Mm-hmm.
So from the outside, I think it looks like super, like, fun events and, like, yeah. interactive. But there is a level of kind of work to do as well, because mm-hmm. you still need to make a good impression and like meet with the PRs and the people who are behind the sort of brand deals mm-hmm. and like the marketing side of things.
Mm-hmm.
So that also takes a lot of kind of networking and mm-hmm. you know, being showing up as your like best self as mm-hmm. well. I try to, you know, stick to somewhat of a routine and yeah. have like my gym days in there.
Mm-hmm.
Aside from like the physical side of movement, I also just love it for de-stressing mm-hmm. and getting to unwind like after a long day. Or mm-hmm. on an ideal day, I love to go in the morning mm-hmm. and just kind of get it out of the way.
Yeah.
I also, you know, there's a lot of social mm-hmm. Aspects of this job as yeah. well, I would say. So like meeting a lot of friends and mm-hmm. Also networking with, you know, other creatives and
mm-hmm.
whether it's just like going for a coffee or like going for a meal, sit down. I think being the only kind of person in my friendship group who's doing this kind of job or mm-hmm. career.
Yeah.
At the beginning, it did feel quite lonely. I was mm-hmm. like, oh my gosh, I'm here like talking about, you know, posting on socials and things, and my friends, to them, it's not really like a big deal. Mm-hmm. So I find it quite tricky to relate and like be able to, you know, discuss that side of things. So I think mm-hmm. having creative friends and people in similar fields definitely helps with that, because you can push and motivate each other in that aspect.
Mm-hmm. I'd love to also later on hear more about that kind of creative friends and the communities that you've made within that, because I think that's something that's so important to making sure that you're constantly adapting and evolving as well, making sure that you're surrounding yourself with other creative minds, but also having these people that you've always known, like your core friends and your core group, to make sure that you like kind of stay grounded as well. It's a really interesting balance. But talking about your kind of beauty content and content creation, I understand that you started that journey in 2018 while working in advertising. So, and then since then you've turned it into a full-time career. So what was the catalyst for that decision? What was the point at which you wanted to transition from part-time content creation to full-time?
I've always been a fan of makeup. I've always really enjoyed it. Like, I would, every time my mum would leave the house, I would like play with her makeup and you know, play around with different looks
mm-hmm.
and then, you know, go wash it off before she would come home. And this is, you know, when I was a child, essentially. And I loved just like watching fashion shows and also music videos is where I saw a lot of inspo.
Mm-hmm.
So that definitely, you know, that definitely was where my interest for makeup and beauty started. Aside from that, when I was working in my advertising job, I worked for a magazine company mm-hmm. and Cosmopolitan was like one of their brands.
Mm-hmm.
And we would have a lot of beauty sales around us, so I would just like buy loads of makeup and mm-hmm. just want to like experiment with different colors and mm-hmm. different styles, and again, like being in the magazine world, you're just exposed to so much inspo and ideas. Like, we were surrounded by magazines and
mm-hmm.
it was just amazing to like have that around me mm-hmm. and that definitely, you know, made me more sort of passionate about using makeup to express myself.
So what kind of challenges did you face in this change in career? Were there any particular boundaries that you faced as a South Asian woman?
When it comes to the makeup side of things,
mm-hmm.
like, not so much now, but when I kind of look back at starting out and, you know, like trying to be a bit more creative with the looks and things, I definitely feel like it's seen as kind of being a bit out there
mm-hmm.
and it's not really a typical sort of career move, I would say.
Mm-hmm.
For me, when I started becoming more consistent was definitely in lockdown, because I had all the time to sort of sit in my room and like create. There wasn't really much to do, but
I guess there was always that feeling of maybe like the unknown of what that sort of career path would look like, mm-hmm. especially at that time. I guess content creation is so much bigger now than it even was last year. So
yeah.
The idea of starting around that lockdown period was when a lot of people first started doing a lot more social media. So maybe that sense of how could this progress, where is this going, could have been mm-hmm. a certain sense, not potentially a boundary, but more of an uncertainty that you wouldn't necessarily have in your advertising career, for example, mm-hmm. because it does feel like there's some more sense of stability. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, I'll definitely agree with that because, you know, at the time when I first started, I definitely would not have thought that I could turn it into like a full-time career. Mm-hmm. It was more my passion project as I was working in advertising because I loved being behind the scenes. I loved the production world as well. Mm-hmm. So for me, it just never really was a realistic sort of career move. But like you said, not knowing where it could go is something that I probably didn't even think about at the time because to me it was just like a little passion project, like my little Instagram where I post pictures for like inspo and just try different things.
And so how do you use makeup as a tool for cultural expression? So like what sort of things do you do that makes you feel more connected to your culture and your heritage through makeup and beauty?
I would definitely say that in lockdown was like the time where I experimented the most and had a lot of fun with like makeup. I did a series where I was like wearing different saris and matching like do like crazy eye makeup to kind of match the colors of the saris and like that aesthetic. So because for me it was kind of like how do I, you know, still stay connected to like my culture, my roots and express that with makeup. And I think even just like playing around with color and like different designs like graphic liners and things in general, it just it's not really like your everyday kind of look. So I've definitely enjoyed, you know, getting to play around with that. And you know, same thing when it comes to fashion as well. Like I love doing a little, you know, like a fusion, like a hybrid moment and getting to express myself. But we were speaking about Dalden earlier and I think going to events like that is just so amazing because you get people, you really see people embracing their roots and culture and, you know, doing that so freely in the UK. So,
Yeah, really no, absolutely. And we're going to talk more about your kind of cultural identity and journey. But just before that, you're not just a beauty content creator, even though we've spoken a lot about that. You've worked on campaigns addressing things like colorism and diversity initiatives as well, which I understand are rooted in your journey to self-love. So can you talk a little bit about this journey and how your relationship with self-love has evolved since you kind of started content creation to now?
You know, growing up, as a darker skinned, like brown girl, I actually grew up in Germany. So I grew up in a small town, a small city in Germany called Münster, where we were like, you know, a handful of coloured people in the class and, you know, in the school as well. So essentially a minority. And growing up in that kind of environment was definitely challenging, I would say, because the beauty standards and the beauty ideal is so sort of westernized that growing up I never really felt, you know, worthy or beautiful. And then within that, growing up in the South Asian community where colorism is such a huge thing, definitely made it harder because, you know, being of a darker skin complexion is seen as like, you know, not it's seen as like being less essentially. And that definitely had an impact on me growing up because I was always kind of seen as the darker skin one, like in my family. And I grew up, you know, around a lot of comments around that, you know, people telling me not to go in the sun too much or people telling me that these colors don't suit me, that I should stick to colors that suit my skin tone. So that definitely had an impact on me growing up and on my self-esteem, I would say. For me, I didn't properly start loving myself until I was about 18, 19 when I went to uni. I went to uni in Leicester and I was surrounded by a lot of, I would say, black women, black girls, black women who definitely helped me in my journey of self-love and helped me kind of embrace, embrace my skin complexion. And yeah, I think the whole like the whole move from Germany to the UK in general is something that, you know, helped me in terms of my self-esteem and acceptance, I would say, because we suddenly went from being a minority in this like small city in Germany to being exposed to so many different cultures, people from different walks of life, that it definitely opened my eyes and made me, you know, see the world through a different lens, because I had friends from like all different kind of backgrounds.
Mm-hmm.
So that was something that definitely helped me embrace like myself mm-hmm. and helped me on my journey of like self-love too.
That's amazing. And we're going to talk a little bit more about your kind of immigrant experience as well. And just before we did that, I wanted to ask about a particularly memorable event or collaboration that you've done related to kind of your diversity work, or something where you felt like you've been able to overcome perceptions of colorism in any of your work.
I think when I first sort of started modeling, mm-hmm. I actually worked on a project with Madhu, who yeah. is our mutual, mm-hmm. and she was incredible. And you know, she organized this whole shoot, casting darker skinned South Asians, and mm-hmm. there was two of us were Tamil as well, so mm-hmm. from Sri Lankan Tamil. And I think to me that definitely meant a lot, because even, you know, even in ad campaigns now, like mm-hmm. going to Sri Lanka, going to India, you will only see fair-skinned models being mm-hmm. used in media and in advertising all across the country, which is so wild to me. Like even mm-hmm. in 2024, I was
yeah.
in India earlier this year in January. Mm-hmm. I was in Sri Lanka 3 weeks ago, actually. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that's still very much the case. Like mm-hmm. when you're on the streets, all the people in the billboards, TV ads, everything, they're still only really casting light-skinned models.
Yeah, and absolutely.
To me, that's so crazy. But one other favourite campaign that I worked on, probably one of my biggest campaigns, I would say, is an Olaplex campaign.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the hero images is like me holding my hair up, like tying my hair above my head. And yeah. in it, you can see, like, I noticed that they didn't retouch my underarms, which is such a minor wow. thing, but
yeah.
I've got hyperpigmentation, discoloration mm-hmm. under my arms, and it's always been such an insecurity that I'm, you know, I have this hyperpigmentation. But the fact that in this huge, like, global campaign, they didn't retouch my underarms, even a little thing like that, just made me so happy and kind of proud to represent and just, like, accept and be happy with an
Absolutely.
Insecurity that I know a lot of my Black peers and other brown girls may have.
Mm-hmm.
I also worked in a really amazing hair story for mm-hmm. it was a collab with Sid Hayes, a hairstylist, and Babyliss.
Mm-hmm.
And it was in Grazia magazine, and mm-hmm. even in this magazine, you know, they didn't retouch or like remove my arm hairs.
Mm-hmm.
They let me keep my nose ring in, like little things like that. I think just really made me happy.
I was about to say, when you were talking about how when you're in India, the ad campaigns were still fair-skinned women, I find it so interesting, because if you look at how South Asian women are portrayed now in Hollywood, you have dark-skinned women in Bridgerton, in like mm-hmm. kind of leading comedies, rom-coms. They just look like a wide range of what a South Asian woman can look like. Mm-hmm. But still, if you look at a Bollywood movie, it's still the same archetype of what a beautiful woman is. And it's not saying that either one is less or more, but there is more to the concept of beauty than what was constructed so long ago. And
exactly.
I think it's so interesting that in a way, like the diaspora of South Asian people has somewhat overtaken what can be seen as beauty than the core of where that beauty came from. It's so interesting.
Yeah, I completely agree with you.
Mm-hmm.
I think as soon as, like, you know, a show like Bridgerton
mm-hmm.
And seeing them cast people like Simone Ashley, like it's mm-hmm. it's honestly amazing, and it makes you feel more seen. It makes you feel, you mm-hmm. know, like they've normalized it way before, like, you know, Bollywood has Bollywood or Hollywood, like have. So yeah, it's nice to see that the Western world is like adapting.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's a shame that in a lot of the Bollywood movies and roles, they still have that kind of ideal standard of beauty.
And I think it's also a sense of kind of intergenerationally, they've just kind of kept up with the norms and they've reproduced them in a way that, as you mentioned, when you were at Leicester, you had these interactions with Black women and different ethnicities, and it kind of taught you different ways to celebrate your culture or just see different ideas of what normalcy is. Mm-hmm. And I think potentially when they are in Bollywood and those kind of industries, when they are kind of in their own bubble and they have these loops where they just kind of reinforce those same narratives, it's easy for those kind of narratives to be reproduced that there is a certain type of beauty and there's no one really challenging that or being an alternate view that can move things forward. So let's rewind a little bit and talk about your personal journey and your cultural identity as a Tamil girl growing up in a small city in Germany. Can you paint us a picture of what that was like? So what your experiences were like? You talked a little bit about how moving to London, moving to the UK was a great change. But what was your experiences growing up?
Even in school, like I was saying, there's a handful of like coloured people in the whole kind of class. And I think it definitely made it tricky to kind of be in touch with my own roots as well and try and embrace being like Tamil, Sri Lankan. I think there's moments where I was growing up and I was very small. I remember thinking like, oh, like, why couldn't I have been born into like a white family and just like be normal? Because to me, that was normal because we were surrounded by, you know, majority German and European families. To me, I was just like, oh, to me, it just looked like they had all the kind of freedom in the world. They could be super expressive and things. And, you know, having parents that were slightly stricter and not as, you know, like, let me do what I want was definitely tough for me to kind of understand that we weren't just like any other, like, German family. And that to us, like, there's this cultural side of things where we were trying to, you know, whether it's like even listening to like Tamil music or like eating Tamil food, like I think that difference was quite tricky for me to understand, like being born in Germany and like growing up there, growing up somewhere where you're such a minority. I do feel like as I got older, like the friends that I had, they were all from different backgrounds, like Russian, like Polish. So that definitely helped because, you know, everyone has their own cultural things, like whether it's the food they eat or like the clothes that they wear, everyone has their own kind of thing that they're embracing. So for me, growing up, a way for me to kind of keep in touch with my my own culture, my roots was, you know, through food. My parents love cooking Sri Lankan food. We would watch a lot of Tamil movies. We would, you know, listen to a lot of Tamil songs. So to me, it was nice that despite being in such a Western world, I was still able to do those things that meant a lot to me. I grew up Catholic as well, so we would sometimes go to a Tamil like Catholic church, and like going there would be such an experience because you're only surrounded by Tamil people, and it's like all the Tamil people in the area would kind of come together, and you would see like so many of you at that time. That's definitely one of my like core memories as well.
That's amazing that they had a Tamil community there that had a church and still had kind of those regular services in a community in that sense. That's really amazing. How many sort of people would you know in your area? Or was it a larger part of Germany that were all coming to this church?
Yeah, I would definitely say in our area, there's probably only about like two or three like families from what I remember. But the church was definitely like a wider thing. Like people would travel out to go to this church and meet like once a week or once every 2 weeks, I think it was. So yeah, that was, it's such a crazy like memory for me, like thinking back at it now, because at the time going to school and like my everyday life, you do feel like, you do feel kind of alone, but having that was definitely amazing. And, you know, everyone, if not, yeah, I would say most people, if not everyone, was probably an immigrant as well, moving there from Sri Lanka. And so, yeah, that was kind of really special.
Yeah, that's really exciting. I think it's quite similar. I'm Indian Tamil, so my parents came to the UK and there weren't many temples or koyals in the north of England, really. And I remember when they came when the temple in Birmingham was being built. I'm not sure if you've been to that one, but it's a big Balaji temple. And they talk about when it was built like it was that was the moment for their kind of immigrant experience, because it was so huge for them. And you'd then go back to your daily work where it's mainly white or Western people, and then your home and your street and your neighborhood also wouldn't have that many Indian or Tamil people. So that the temple really was kind of an oasis of like back to their culture. And that's really special. It's so nice that you had something similar with your church and that community in Germany. That's so really beautiful. So talking about your move from Germany to the UK, so did you come for university or did you come before that? So at what point did you move and what was that move like?
So I was actually 10 when I moved here. So I didn't have much of a choice, I would say. But for me at the time, you know, I was devastated. I was like, I've built these, I've made these friends for life. I just started secondary school there. So I was only at secondary school for about 6 weeks. And, you know, I was, I loved like learning. I loved going to school. I was, you know, I just got into a grammar school as well. So, and it was one of the sort of top kind of grammar schools in the area. So academically I was doing really well. And to me it was, it was devastating, like hearing that we were moving to the UK, to England, and not really, you know, the fact that I wasn't going to know anyone, the fact that I only spoke basic, like, English. I think definitely, you know, had a knock-on effect on my confidence, because, because I guess I didn't have a choice. I felt like, you know, I had to, I had to kind of try and embrace it as much as I can. But, like, moving here, I had to go back to sort of reading children's books. Like, and to me, it almost felt like, you know, I just felt so stupid. I just felt so, like, going from one of the top sort of grammar schools in Germany to reading children's books to try and understand the language and, like, get to grasp with it was very difficult. And I remember walking around and always having this, like, German to English dictionary, like, in my pocket. And that's kind of what helped me through school. But I think... And then also moving here and then going back to primary school, because I had to... I had to join year six. So the last year of primary school. So to me, it was just like, oh my gosh, like I'm going in reverse. I'm like... so that was definitely a challenge and quite tricky to accept. But I think the teachers at my school definitely made it so much easier for me. Like even when I didn't understand things, they would draw like pictures, little diagrams, because... Yeah, I think it's tricky trying to learn a language and then having to also, you know, learn like sciences and other subjects in a new language. So, yeah, it was a challenge, but definitely something that, you know, I learned to embrace, because I never wanted to lose the German side of things. And I still try my best to kind of maintain it by watching movies, listening to German music and speaking to my cousins in German. But yeah, that was a while ago now. So.
So did you come to London when you moved from Germany to here, or what part of the UK were you in?
So the first part I ever visited was actually Birmingham, because I had family there. So that was my first kind of exposure into moving to the UK, going to Birmingham. And it honestly just felt like such a foreign world. And like here people wear school uniform. Like it was just such a new experience. That was my first kind of glimpse into it. But growing up here, I've always lived in the sort of Kingston, like southwest, like Surrey area.
Okay, amazing. And what was the difference between the Kingston, Sri Lankan, Tamil scene and the German one? Because obviously you've mentioned there wasn't really a German one. You were finding your way to keep in touch with your culture. Do you feel like there was a lot more in London that you could relate to and resonate with?
Absolutely. Going from being a handful of coloured people in the whole class to going to a place where two-thirds of the class is foreign was such an experience. And I definitely feel like it helped me in a way to settle in and feel more sort of comfortable. So yeah, I think it was great, like being surrounded by people from all these from different paths of lives and mm-hmm. being able to learn about their cultures as mm-hmm. well was amazing.
Yeah. And do you feel like that helped your own cultural identity when you moved to London? And also, I guess those teenage years are so formative anyway. So the idea that you could tap more into your culture and your heritage at that point, was that easier in London?
Yeah, I would definitely say it did help a lot. Mm-hmm. And especially like what you were saying, seeing other like Tamil people in the space was great to see, and definitely helped me kind of embrace my culture and want to be in touch with it more mm-hmm. as well.
And then your uni experience in Leicester, that must have been a really multicultural place, a multicultural city, because even from my experience, especially in the South Asian scene, there is so much in Leicester. Food-wise, Leicester is mm-hmm. top class. So what was that experience like, and what was your university experience like in terms of bolstering your cultural identity?
Yeah, moving to Leicester was definitely such a like good move, and I actually didn't even visit Leicester before I moved.
Oh, wow.
It was one of those like on a whim kind of decisions, because I actually flopped my A-levels really badly. And in my head, I was like, unless it's like through clearing, I'm probably not going to go to any of the unis that I've applied to, because I took some really tricky subjects mm-hmm. and ended up not doing so well. So to me, the fact that I even went to Leicester was such a like, was such a fluke. I was like, how did that even happen? But I think when I first moved there, it was great to, you know, be surrounded by so many different people, and it's such a uni town as well, so like mm-hmm. even our nights out like would just be so varied, and I'd go to a lot of like different events there. But mm-hmm. I think like you were saying, like being in a space where culture is celebrated so much was mm-hmm. definitely, you know, it helped me. Mm-hmm. And you know, I had a lot of moments growing up where I would struggle and not really see where I'd fit in or understand, you know, being from like moving from Germany and then trying to grow up in the UK and then still trying to embrace my cultural roots but also adapt to like the Western world. It's definitely been a journey, but yeah, I'm really grateful for the experience.
So over this time, you've obviously had lots of interactions with different cultures, and I guess that would make you reflect on or grow your own Tamil identity. But something that I spoke to Madhu about was this idea that your Tamil identity might be quite separate from the notion of Sri Lanka as a country. Mm-hmm. So do you feel like a connection with Sri Lanka? Do you feel like a Sri Lankan? Or in Madhu's eyes, she sees herself as more Elam Tamil and not necessarily as associated with that. So what's your take on that? What are your opinions?
Mm-hmm. Over the years, like going back to Sri Lanka, you can definitely feel that there's a difference. Mm-hmm. And you know, the civil war only ended recently, ended mm-hmm. in 2009. Mm-hmm. And we did visit before, but you do sort of feel that it's a lot more, like that the government has put a lot more things in place to kind of show mm-hmm. that it's so crazy. But like, I remember growing up and going visiting Sri Lanka mm-hmm. When I was little, and you would see that a lot of the signs, the posters and things would be in Tamil as well. But I would say that over the years, like every time I do go there, you see less of that mm-hmm. and you see things being written in Sinhalese, which, you know, is something that we've kind of come to an understanding with, but it is a sort of shame to mm-hmm. see that they're, you know, trying to erase that side of Sri Lanka, which is the side of Sri Lanka that I know. Mm. Both of my parents were actually born and raised in Colombo. Mm-hmm. So they've always been very much, you know, in the city, very much having to embrace both Tamil and Sinhalese, like, mm-hmm. you know, speaking the language, learning the language, and being around people that are from both places. Mm-hmm. But, you know, as I've gotten older, speaking to them, hearing their stories, I have, you know, it's become more apparent that I've become more aware of their experiences of growing up growing up in Sri Lanka and being discriminated against just because, you know, they're Tamil.
Mm-hmm.
I actually visited the north of Sri Lanka for the first time when I went there, when I was there 3 weeks ago. And, you know, I think especially there, especially being in Jaffna and seeing so many more, like you were saying, Elam Tamils,
mm-hmm.
seeing so many more Elam Tamils was such a different experience for me mm-hmm. because being in Colombo is such a, you know, you have all different kinds of, you have people from all different sorts of backgrounds and even a lot of foreigners like living there.
Mm.
So going somewhere, going to a place like Jaffna where there's, you know, majority Elam Tamils, it definitely helped me understand and kind of in a way resonate with, you know, what went on mm. years ago. Mm-hmm. Like places like, you know, the Jaffna Library and like visiting spaces like that also made me realize that, you know, we know the history and we know what went on. The library was burned down.
Mm.
And even, you know, even being in a public space like that and seeing that there's a specific tone of like storytelling mm. and series of events that mm-hmm. kind of happened
mm.
That's not shown, mm. I would say, in the library. Like, you know, it was found that majority of the people that, you know, attacked, that created this like arson and attack was people from the state. So seeing that narrative is nowhere to be found
mm.
When that was the series of, you know, events is so wild to me. Mm. It's only through like doing my own like research and like reading into it, speaking to people and seeing information about people, you know, sharing what actually happened on that day
mm-hmm.
is how you kind of find out the truth and mm. what actually happened.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, I think it's a shame that even now when you visit places like Jaffna,
mm-hmm.
Which holds so much history,
mm-hmm.
In terms of like the struggle,
mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's wild to me. Mm. It's wild that side of it is so, you know, brushed under the carpet, and
yeah.
even now there's still a lot of like missing people from the civil war, and mm-hmm. it's just been so disregarded mm. by the state, the government, that it's, you know, it's horrendous. It's such a like bitter feeling, mm. I would say. I really enjoyed visiting the library actually, and we spoke to a lot of people working at the library are Elam Tamils, mm. and hearing them speak about, you know, how passionate they are about, you know, the library and all the things that they recovered
mm-hmm.
Was really special.
Mm-hmm.
And to them, you can also, you know, feel, you can hear the pain in their voices as well when they speak about them remembering like when the library was burnt down. Mm. And I was speaking to this librarian, and she was telling me that she, you know, has memories of cycling like from the library to her home and like, you know, dodging bombs. And I was like, this is, she was saying it in such a casual way, mm. but that was her upbringing. Like that was so her truth,
mm.
being, you know, having that kind of environment.
Mm-hmm.
She was saying it so casually, but I was just like, lady, like this is insane.
It's insane.
The fact that this is how she grew up.
It's a difficult one, I think, because yeah. you can see all of that pain and trauma, but at the same time, the diaspora and Elam Tamils around the world still take all of the beautiful parts of their culture and the saris and the food and the makeup and everything
mm.
that creates a sense of cultural identity that will still exist and prevail and last on. But it's a shame that there is a sense of pain and trauma that people have had to leave and then keep up these kind of traditions and heritage because they love that they had that in their home country. But if they were to go to their home country, they can see other aspects of their history, even things that they would have loved not to have happened. But mm. to see it airbrushed out of history means that you can't necessarily learn from those mistakes of the past. And I think you have to kind of be upfront and you know, document what happened clearly, because that's the only way that we can ensure things like that don't happen again. Mm-hmm. And you can celebrate the amazing parts of culture and identity, but also note that really terrible things have happened to this community in the past, and there needs to be safeguards to stop that from happening again.
Exactly.
Do you feel like with your work that we discussed earlier, you can authentically represent that in what you do? Or do you feel like there's sometimes challenges in that? And if so, what kind of challenges do you face?
I feel like I am able to express mm-hmm. myself freely.
Yeah.
I have noticed that sometimes people class South Asians as like yeah. one big bracket.
Mm-hmm.
So I think the campaigns and the projects that I've worked, that I've enjoyed working on the most would be the ones where, you know, you're, I don't want to say labelled correctly, but mm-hmm. where people actually acknowledge where you are from, because mm-hmm. South Asian can mean so many different things. Mm-hmm. So I definitely really appreciate when someone refers to me as a Tamil, Sri Lankan Tamil person, because mm-hmm. it makes you realize, and it makes you feel seen.
Mm-hmm. Do you feel like that happens more recently, or have you, since you started your content creation, been able to experience those correct moments and those real representative moments?
Yeah, I would say that definitely, I would say that in the more recent years, that has mm-hmm. definitely been the case, where people are, you know, trying to do that and mm-hmm. acknowledging people in the right way.
Mm-hmm.
So that feels amazing.
Mm-hmm.
Whenever I speak to my American friends and you say Asian to them, that means something completely
yeah.
different.
Yeah, yeah,
so
yeah.
yeah, I really, you know, I really appreciate when someone actually tries to acknowledge like where you yeah. are from,
mm-hmm.
and it makes a difference.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And you mentioned you were at London Fashion Week recently. Mm-hmm. So what were there any Tamil creators, designers, fashion? What was the Tamil or maybe South Asian fashion scene like at London Fashion Week? And was there anything that stuck out to you?
One show that stands out the most mm-hmm. Is the Ahluwalia show.
Yeah.
And seeing, you know, seeing Priya create this amazing space and seeing her bring together like both of her sort of cultures
mm-hmm.
In her designs and in her work is really amazing to see.
The reason why I asked the question is I feel like in beauty and fashion a lot more recently, I'm sure you've seen these kind of trends that come and go where people are like, oh, we should wear this. I think it was like a Scandi wedding trend, and it was essentially like dupattas. And
yeah.
then they kind of have a jewellery one where it's just bangles. And there's these usually white people taking an element or saying that they've kind of come up with this new idea, and it's just an element of a South Asian cultural thing that we've had for generations. So I think it's always nice in places like Fashion Week or these big events where South Asian or Tamil designers themselves can create a fashion line that doesn't do things because it's a trend, but they really authentically show a journey of a certain Asian fashion culture. So maybe not just in Fashion Week, but more generally, is there a designer or someone that you'd like to give a shout out to, of someone who's doing good work in the space?
There is one designer that comes to mind. Her name's Abana Kugudasan. And she founded the brand Kitschy Couture.
Mm-hmm.
And Cesar actually wore one of her pieces
oh, wow.
Very recently to the BMI Awards.
Okay.
And that was honestly incredible to see, because all her designs and pieces remind me of those birthday cakes.
Mm.
And like, you know, those Barbie birthday cakes
yeah.
with like different layers.
Yeah, yeah,
yeah,
yeah,
like those towel ones and little dresses and frocks.
Oh.
That are such a fond memory of mine, like growing up, because
mm-hmm.
I feel like every every like Tamil, every Tamil kid has probably been put into one of these like super crazy, like frilly frocks.
Yeah.
But yeah, her pieces are, the inspo behind her pieces is that. So,
oh, that's so sweet. I love that idea.
Yeah. And every time she like showcases her work, you can see that inspo, you can see the kind of influence.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, that's really amazing to see.
That's amazing. So kind of moving on, I want to know more about your inspiration and impact, because Desi dreamers like me want to know those aspirations that you have so that we can think about where we can find these motivations in our own lives. Mm-hmm. So how has your background in your university career and your advertising career influenced your approach that you now have to your full-time content creation and personal branding, modelling and everything that you do now?
So I actually studied international marketing and business at university. Mm-hmm. So I feel like the marketing degree has definitely helped in some ways. Yeah. And it also probably helped me land, the job in advertising. Mm-hmm. And even in my advertising role, I was working in sort of operations. But the role that I started doing was very sort of sales admin based. Mm-hmm. So I kind of worked my way up into the production space because that's where I wanted to be. Mm-hmm. And I was that annoying person that was like, can I come and like shadow your team? Like, can I just sit in on some meetings and things? Because I wanted to be part of the production project management team, sort of leading the ad campaigns. Mm-hmm. So I think working in that space for 6 years almost definitely helped me and gave me an idea of what goes on behind the scenes. Mm-hmm. Of the advertising world, and working on those different ad campaigns definitely helped me. Mm-hmm. Do the job that I'm doing now. Mm-hmm. Properly, I would say, because, you know, when I was a project manager, we would work on different campaigns and cast different photographers, work with different editors, mm-hmm. art directors, stylists and makeup artists to kind of make that campaign happen. So mm-hmm. from like having that knowledge and kind of expertise of setting up shoots and setting up campaigns, has definitely helped me, I would say. Mm-hmm. I always say that I've gone, you know, from being behind the camera to like being in front, because mm-hmm. And to me that's really special as well, because I've always, one element of like the job that I enjoyed so much was, you know, getting to work with different people and creating kind of the best campaign possible mm-hmm. with the best people as well. So making sure that there's like diverse teams behind the scenes was one of my like passions. Mm-hmm. And yeah, I think having that expertise has definitely helped in like the modeling world and the modeling world and the content creation side of things as well. Mm-hmm. Whenever I'm on set and someone says, oh, like, so like, what was your background? Like, what did you do before? I would tell them that I used to work in production and, mm-hmm. And sometimes I am like, you know, low key judging the production of a campaign, because I'm like, I know how this works. Like, so yeah, it's definitely helped me, I would say. Mm-hmm.
And it's funny because you never know where your career in these sort of aspects are going to take off and where you're going to go next. But somehow things that you've done in the past will always come into play in helping you. Making that career really positive now, and it's always really great to see that you didn't necessarily know that you were going to pivot into full-time content creation, but your marketing is still helping you out with that, and it's all kind of fed into each other, which is really nice to see.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I always say as well that sometimes, you know, I've been full-time for, this is my second year being full-time, but mm-hmm. I always say that I do want to dip back into the production side of things essentially, mm-hmm. and you know, maybe do pick up some projects on a freelance basis and kind of work on that. So mm-hmm. it's definitely something that I don't want to completely like, you know, shut out. But in the future.
Yeah, in the future. Absolutely. And I saw that you recently attended the National Television Awards. So I wanted to ask about what that experience was like. And also, were there any really inspirational or impactful moments at the celebration of TV media? And how did it maybe link to your understanding of representation in media and your own cultural experiences with TV?
I think going to the NTAs was such a crazy experience, because I actually ended up going with Fudge, a hair brand. Mm-hmm. And I did not know what to expect, but I've seen the NTAs, you know, when it's on TV. So to actually be in that space and be able to, you know, take up space mm-hmm. Was amazing. Mm-hmm. I was surrounded by some really incredible creatives mm-hmm. as well, and And yeah, to me it was a crazy experience. Yeah. Like, to actually be in that box and like watch the show, mm-hmm. Was insane. There was actually one show that won a few awards, mm-hmm. And it was about the post office scandal.
Yeah, the post office scandal. Yeah, yeah, yeah. I watched it. I think it's called Mr. Bates versus the Post Office.
Exactly. Yeah, yeah. And I actually haven't seen it. But
oh,
honestly,
it's amazing.
seeing the show and, you know, based on real life mm-hmm. events, real people mm-hmm. win so many awards definitely inspired me. And I was like, I have to go mm-hmm. and like watch this right now. Mm-hmm. They actually had some of the real people on stage, mm-hmm. And you know, she, one of the ladies, she like made a statement and said that some of the people still haven't been paid, and mm-hmm. that was so impactful because mm-hmm. it was one of those moments where you're like, ooh, like, yeah. don't think that was part of the script, but you know, she had to keep it real and let people know that this is their reality, this is mm-hmm. what they're still going through, still fighting for. So. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that was definitely an inspirational moment where, mm-hmm. and it's made me want to go and like watch the show as well to see what it's about and understand it better.
Amazing. And when you were saying about how you still want to have your finger in or like foot in the door in terms of production, do you feel like it's kind of media production? What sort of production do you mean by that?
Mm-hmm. I would definitely say media production and mm-hmm. different ad campaigns. Mm-hmm. I would love for it to be more on the creative side of things, so where there's some creative reign. Mm-hmm. But anything from like video production mm-hmm. to sort of stills production is my bag. Mm-hmm. And I just really enjoy sort of working on something. And I think the organizing side of it is obviously stressful, can be stressful, especially when there's like time constraints and things. But I think just having that, having great people on set, having that vibe on the day where you're mm-hmm. creating art is such a special feeling. Mm-hmm. And yeah, it's definitely something I want to do more of.
Yeah, amazing. And linking to that, what's your vision over the next couple of years? What are your dreams and aspirations? So we talked about production, but is there anything else that you want to do, places you want to go, anywhere you want your career to take you?
Mm-hmm. I'm still very much like in my sort of modeling journey because mm-hmm. I only really started in lockdown. Mm-hmm. 2021 is when I first got signed. So I think there's still so much to kind of explore when it comes to that. Mm-hmm. I'd love to also, I'm kind of working on it at the moment, but I'm trying to get out to the US mm-hmm. And have maybe a little New York sabbatical. Yeah. So that's kind of on the cards. Mm-hmm. Just trying to like make it all happen. There's so much that kind of goes on in the background of it.
Yeah.
Kind of in process, like working on that. But yeah, I think where I've just always been UK based, I would love to, you know, explore and do this in different parts of the world. I think mm-hmm. that would be amazing.
Yeah.
I also really love to travel, so mm-hmm. definitely something that I want to, you know, keep doing and just keep kind of making mm-hmm. memories and experiences in different places.
And there must be so many opportunities in New York in terms of collaborations and brands that you could work with and things like that as well. I'm imagining there must be so much potential there for mm-hmm. in terms of opportunities as well.
Exactly. Yeah.
Very exciting.
I think because we're so like UK based,
yeah,
being able to work in the US is such a different ball game. Mm-hmm. And I think it would be amazing to, you know, have that opportunity and be represented in those markets as well. So mm-hmm. that's definitely like one of my next steps.
Yeah.
But yeah, I'm excited about it.
Yeah, watch the space.
Yeah, exactly.
Very exciting. And we're going to move on to my final question now. Do you think of yourself as a dreamer? So often we get told not to daydream, not to get distracted, but to concentrate. But is there sometimes a necessity to sit and dream or fantasize about a reality to eventually break those boundaries and be a trailblazer?
I definitely think so. And I would, you know, see myself as a dreamer 100%. Mm-hmm. When I look at my sort of journal entries and notes that I've made mm-hmm. in the past, like years ago, it's crazy because a lot of the things on there I have achieved, and mm-hmm. looking at it sort of years later, is such an insane feeling because, you know, that all started from like a thought or a dream or, you know, some kind of aspiration. So to see it actually like unfolding and happen is, it's crazy to me. And I'm such a like firm believer in sort of shooting your shot. And even when you're like, even when you're networking and like speaking to people, I always feel like you really never know like where this could go or like what it could lead to. Not in a sort of opportunist kind of way, but just in just like one little conversation or like one little interaction can really lead to something way bigger. So I always say to my friends and like, you know, people around me as well, I always say that we have to, you know, stay like planting seeds because you actually never know what little piece of kind of work or self kind of work that you put in, like what it could lead to. So yeah, to me, like seeing old notes and like old kind of journal entries and things is crazy because I'm like, wow, like even if it's 2 years later, 3 years later, there's still things that I've achieved that I've kind of written about back then. So to me, it's like, you know, I would always say we have to kind of use that wisely and I guess like try as much as you can.
And are there any other inspirational Desi Dreamers you want to give a shout out to? Any of your role models? Also people that I could potentially interview as well?
I would definitely say there's a lot of people that I've kind of connected with in the music scene. Prit, absolutely love her music, love what she does as well. And we've gotten closer over the last few years. And I think it's just so special to, you know, do things together and like be a part of their journey as well. She's incredible. Also one of my good friends, St. Ravin, makes amazing Tamil music, quite like R&B alternative. Another one of my good friends is Tashan. Her artist name is Bombay Mami. And she's actually, she's from Swiss. She lives in London now, but she's actually from Swiss. Does a lot of sort of multilingual music and just incredible. But yeah, definitely some of my favourites.
Lots of people in the music scene, absolutely. And I think when we were talking earlier about Dialed In and Daytimers, organisations like that, bringing together music culture and having this community in London is really exciting for budding Desi Dreamers and just bringing people together. I think it's a really good initiative and definitely something that I want to look more into as I go on with my interviews. So 100%. And also, do you want to plug any social media, how we can follow you, keep up with your work before we finish?
Yeah, so I mean, my handle on both TikTok and Instagram are TabithaMary_. It's where I post most of my work. I would say Instagram's a bit more polished, aesthetic, but TikTok is where, you know, I do a lot more chatting and kind of just like take you on a day with me or behind the scenes of like shoots that I work on. So
thank you so much for listening to Desi Dreamers. I hope this story was a powerful reminder of the incredible resilience, creativity, and determination that defines the South Asian diaspora. We've taken a journey which has explored the cultural influences, personal challenges, and transformative moments that have shaped a unique narrative. Each episode of Desi Dreamers is a testament to the fact that our stories matter. That representation isn't just about seeing ourselves reflected, but about understanding the complex, beautiful journeys that bring us to our most authentic selves. Importantly, our cultural heritage is not a limitation, but our greatest source of strength. Desi Dreamers is powered by Transmission Roundhouse and is available on all major podcast platforms. Make sure to subscribe wherever you get your podcasts so you never miss an episode. And if you love today's story, please leave a review and share it with anyone who needs to hear about these incredible journeys. Next time, I'll be diving into another incredible story that proves our dreams have no boundaries. Until then, keep dreaming, keep believing, and most importantly, keep being unapologetically you. I'm Nikita Nachipan, and this has been Desi Dreamers.